Welcome to Wizard in the Book, the unofficial Dresden Files podcast. My name is S.D. Harker. You can find me at Harker Books on Twitter. Previously in Stormfront by Jim Butcher. Someone's been killing people with magic, and wizard detective Harry Dresden's been looking into it. Dresden has the Doom of Damocles on him, a magical rule of order that says if he breaks the laws of magic, he's dead. Susan Rodriguez has come over for a date with Dresden, but the two are attacked by a toad demon, and she's drunk on the wrong love potion. This chapter starts where the last one left off, with Susan trying to sex up Dresden while the toad demon watches on. And the chapter ends with Harry and Susan, him naked and her still in evening wear, sitting outside in the rain on the sidewalk, about to be arrested by the police. This chapter is fairly straightforward. It's Harry versus toad demon. That's pretty much it. Although, that's the way I always remembered it. I put the last chapter and this chapter all together. This is chapter 14, by the way, if I haven't said that yet. I always put those chapters together. Toad demon attacks, Harry defeats it. Boom. One scene. But it's not really. Actually, there's several little vignettes in here. We get some information with Bob. There's Susan's whole sickness thing that runs throughout it, but that's part of the toad demon attack, I think. But then there's that Morgan scene at the end that I completely forgot even happens. So where is Harry in this? Well, he's still naked. He gets his first kiss with Susan ever. That's an awkward thing while she's drugged up on a love potion. He lives near Reading Road. I'm not sure how to pronounce that. It might be the English Reading, but who knows. But Reading Road always floods, and it's approximately about 70 yards from his apartment because he says he runs for 40, and then they've got 30 yards to go. That's how I figured that out. It may be more, maybe less, but there it is. He knows more magic than Mr. or Mrs. Shadows, the person who's doing the magical killings, and smacks him through a hologram that he shows up in. That's the other thing that shows up in this chapter that I didn't really realize was in there, that the shadow guy shows up. I for some reason, don't remember this happening at all, or I remember this happening, but not right in the middle of this big battle. He debates leaving Susan. We show that somewhere inside him, I mean, he's human. He's got a will there, won't there, on, off again sort of switch of heroism and not. He is human. He has flaws. He has thoughts of abandoning people to their doom. And maybe he thinks maybe one of us will live if he can run to the water and get away from the toad demon. But we also see his heroism when he chooses to stick behind and defend her, even though he's really got no way to do it. He's naked and he's got a big stick. That's pretty much his only thing. But he's got his knowledge, so there you go. We also learn that he's got a couple more spells showing up. He says he can't calls up the fire because he's tired and because of all the rain. We also learn that he believes fire is an ancient weapon against the darkness and that things that hide it. So that's his sort of belief that he that this is his first idea to go to fire, and that Susan called him on fire and blowing things up in the last chapter, that fire is his main thing. We can sort of assume that just from the evidence in this chapter. But we do get two big old spells in this chapter. One not so big. And I'm sorry about the pronunciation, but Stregalium Finitus. It's a spell he does when the shadow person, the bad sorcerer, let's just call him shadow person. When the shadow person shows up as a hologram to taunt him, basically, and say, how'd you get away from my toad demon? And he says, well, screw you. And he sort of pokes at him for a second. And the guy's like, how'd you do that? That's how he learned that Dresden's a little bit more powerful than this shadow guy. But then the guy starts taunting him some more, calls the demon to him. He's like, you know what? Screw you. And he says the Stregalium Finitus. It's sort of a counterspell attack. I looked up what the words mean. Strega is Italian for witch, so I can only assume that it's like, and finitus is ending. So it's basically spell ending. That is the best I can. It's BS Latin anyway. Let's just be honest. And we sort of learn in this chapter, there's a one throwaway line sort of that spells are a way to bar the mind from magical energy. And it comes up in the future way more. We'll talk about it way more. But so this BS Latin, it really doesn't mean anything outside of what a vague notion of what Dresden wants it to mean. So yeah, it's a counterspell attack. He thrusts his staff, says the words. The guy on the other end screams in anguish. There's the scarlet light that floods over the hologram and devours it and poof, goes away. Then there's the big spell that happens in this chapter. Ventus, Ventus Fulmino. Now again, I think we learned in the last chapter, when he blows some wind, that Ventus is sort of wind, roughly. I couldn't find the base for Fulmino anywhere outside of, I got a basic search on Fulmo is Esperanto for lightning. So basically what he's saying is wind, wind, lightning. And so it's a lightning wind spell, which is sort of what happens. It's super dangerous. He has no ritual to shape it. This is where it comes in. No circle to protect him. No words to shield his mind from the magical energy. So it's sort of like a thought barrier when he says words, that there's magical energy coursing through him that he can sort of just kind of hold off his thoughts. Now, what would happen if he didn't have those words to bar his mind from the magical energy? It doesn't say, but maybe we'll learn in the future. Who knows? And it is sort of just like a big static electricity. He explains it to Susan like a line of people holding hands and scuffing their feet on the carpet and then touching another person, and the static does it, except this is just major big. He says the spell, puts his staff in the air, points at the toad demon that's charging him, and he says the spell, and a spark leaps from the clouds, and, quote, hell roared down in response. Now, there's a lot of things in this book that I like. I like the basic setup. But you can actually see, I think this chapter is where you really start seeing Butcher as a writer, which is good and bad. It means that I'm starting to notice the language, which I should just be paying attention to the story. In my humble opinion, as someone who reads a crap ton of books, I don't like to hear the author a lot, especially in these sort of stories where it's basic action. But Butcher has a way with words, and he does a very good job coming across big ideas. And I really like the idea that hell roared down in response for basically Dresden getting struck by lightning is what happens. It leads to the total toad explosion. The toad demons charged him. I think he says it's about 6 inches away, hits him right around the heart, shoots him back, blows him up. There's little pieces of him everywhere. Harry, on the other hand, his hair is dry and his toenails are blackened. Now, he says his hair is dry, so I guess the rain ends right about now, but the storm does knock his ass back. And that's mostly what we get about Harry in this chapter. And then he sits down on the... He's just still beaten up, so he just sits down on the thing and talks to Morgan for a little bit, and then that's it. White Council's coming. There's nothing else he can do in this chapter. Learn a little bit about Susan in this chapter, not a whole lot. She's still under the effects of a love potion. There is a throwaway line here that explains her behavior in the last chapter, but I think it's kind of reductory and it's kind of sexist. It takes away her agency by... Basically what it says is the potion may have lowered her inhibitions because it's the love potion and making her more aggressive, but that's what allowed her to shoot the gun, to pop up and shoot the gun after she done it. I think that's a little bit taking away from her gung-ho-ness about jumping into problems and stuff. But whatever, you know, I guess if that's the way they want to do it, she's not the femme fatale, she's the ingenue, or however you want to call it, even though she knows a lot about the supernatural realm. He still, for some reason that we won't get into, has to set up that she is a little bit more inexperienced and probably wouldn't just grab a gun and start shooting people unless she was under the effects of some inhibition draining thing. But still, it's kind of messed up. Again, first kiss with Harry, which she initiates, but also sort of problematic because, you know, she's on the effects of a spell. So she's not wearing any underwear, which, I mean, come on. That's not necessarily a sexual thing. It could just be like the dress is sort of tight, so she couldn't have a panty line. But it comes off super sexual in this chapter. But we're going to gloss over that. She keeps her keys in her jacket pocket, which I guess is a thing. I don't know. I figured she would have some type of clutch or purse of some kind. Most people do that, but whatever. She claims that this is the worst night of her life so far, but that it will make a great story. A fascinating story, I think, is what she says. So that's kind of interesting that she goes after all these evil things, and apparently getting attacked by a toad demon while vomiting in the street is her worst thing. I'm just saying, she should come down to New Orleans sometime. But that's all we have about Susan. Hopefully that'll be the worst night of her life from here on out. We learn a little bit about Bob. Bob's in this chapter. He showed up in the last chapter a very little bit, saying that, you know, he's not the one that told her to mix the love potion. It's not his fault. Then Bob gets a little uppity in this chapter. We learn that he can handle physical items. He throws the sports bottle escape potion to Dresden. But in exchange for throwing the escape potion, he wants to be let out. And Dresden's like, okay, I'll let you out for the 5 minutes. He's like, nah, let me out for 24 hours. Dresden's like, and this is what we also learn, Dresden's responsible for him and what he does when he's set free, which apparently is weird sexual stuff at sororities or something. So he's kind of a blackmailing asshole. Bob's a jerk, and he won't help without being released. Of course, he has been in the skull for a few hundred years, so he likes being released every once in a while, but still, just kind of a dick. Hard move, man, because he can tell Dresden's in a tight spot, and he takes advantage of it. I think this is the first time we see a supernatural creature taking advantage of Harry. He took advantage of Toot-Toot earlier, I think in chapter like 5, 6, somewhere in there. But go back to that episode if you want to hear about that. But it's just kind of weird. We do get his description when he's out of the skull, though. Orange lights in sort of a cloud that can sort of dance around, but they are physical. They can pick up things, and they need a door. He doesn't just evaporate through the ceiling or through a wall. He actually has to go through the lab door to upstairs. Mr. and Mrs. Shadows makes the first contact. Up till now, the killer of magical means was sort of a background person. We haven't heard anything really about him. Hint, hint, note, note, maybe not. But we do get his description here as a hologram, a deep and dark, non-cold pooling of shadows. A seeming is what Harry calls it. Won't give his or her real name, of course. That's Wizard 101, apparently, right up there with Third Sight. Is the one who called the toad demon. We got basic confirmation on that. It's just not some random toad attack. He's arrogant and doesn't think the demon can get loose of his will, which is kind of also a little crazy, but so it shows this guy's just not just your average murderer. He's a crazy magical murderer. He knows less magic than Harry, so we sort of establish that. It's definitely a novice, not someone who has any kind of straight training or I don't know the word I'm looking for, but it doesn't. Discipline. Doesn't have as much discipline as Harry does. And apparently Harry's in his way. And if someone's in his way, he's going to kill him with a toad demon. Probably the worst way you could do it. When honestly, you could probably do your sex magic thing and blow somebody up that way. Who knows? And apparently is willing to kill bystanders because Susan knows too much, so she's got to die too. She saw the demon, so tough for her. And then again, we have Morgan showing up. Last scene, chapter 8, shows up right after the demon's dead, so wondering if he sat around and watched that happen. It's kind of a dick move to kill Dresden that way. He blames Harry for summoning the demon, saying that, you know, you brought it up, you couldn't control it, you had to put it down. I watched the whole thing, it's evil. And I watched you right at the end there. I didn't see the thing just randomly attack. The council, he says, well, this is proof. The council's been called. I'm going to tell him everything I know. And you're going to die. And Harry's like, dude, that's messed up. And he says Harry's full name. Almost exactly right. Which reminds Harry that, oh, crap, I can't run. I can't do anything. They know me. They can find me. And then Morgan just freaking leaves. Just disappears. Right as the cops are showing up. I'm like, what the hell? Like, you are the most unhelpful person in this entire series so far. And that's saying a lot. There's some unhelpful sons of bitches in this thing. And that's pretty much everything for the characters that happened in chapter 14 of Stormfront. Now, as for the supernatural aspects, I didn't think there was a ton, but there actually are. We covered the spells earlier under Harry, but we also have some more information on the escape potion and how it works. Apparently, more than one person can drink it, and since Harry, I can only assume it's because Harry has more focus, not just in the moment because she's all like, Susan's all sexed up and her inhibitions are crazy, but because he just has more focus as his training as a wizard. But apparently one person can focus both of them if they both drink it. They still both have to drink it. And it affects everything they're holding and carrying because it takes his staff with him and it takes all her clothes and everything. He's naked, but there you go. The effects are a fluttery, wobbly feeling in the body, shakes and quivers uncontrollably, and then flying apart in a million billion tiny pieces, each with a perspective and view of the world as a pattern of different energy. So as he's blown apart, becomes the wind, basically, and sees everything for the patterns of energy and things that it is. It lasts about 5 seconds, which is enough time to basically get him not like Bob. He's not a physical presence. He can actually float through the walls and through the ceiling of his lab and out into the storm. The rain doesn't disturb him. And then he comes together all at once, and that hurts like a son of a bitch. He's nauseous. There's a heavy-duty impact from everywhere at once. It's just a really so great effect, bad after effects. The potions themselves, apparently mixing them can make you sick. Accidents have happened before. And we can see this all through this chapter where Susan was under the effects of the love potion. She drinks the escape potion. As soon as it gets out, she's just vomiting everywhere. And apparently vomiting them can stop their effects. But you see the accidents that have happened with mixing potions before. I assume it would be like mixing medications. You can't combine two things at once without them really messing you up. And if they're two volatile things, like potions would be, to really have some hardcore effects. If you have two side effects that really are bad for you, you could really get messed up and die in horrible ways. Like imagine if this thing had like exploded them both or something like that. So there you go. We get a little bit more about the circle that they're standing in. They're standing in the circle. He's activated it with his will. It's a brass circle held down by U-clamps in Dresden's lab downstairs. When the circle gets activated, the toad spit, the toad itself punches, can't get through it. But apparently, a potion bottle being thrown through it doesn't break the barrier. They both have enough time to slurp down some of the potion and get out. So the barrier's got to still be up or the toad would have attacked him straight on. Maybe it's not because of mortal will that broke it. Bob himself threw it through the potion. So it's not like a mortal broke the potion, the circle. I don't know. Go back to whichever chapter it was with Toot Toot. I said it in the last chapter. There's the last episode, but I can't remember which chapter it is where it explains how circles work and what they do. I don't know. It's an interesting, is that a hiccup or not? That's the only reason I could think it would work is that Bob is not immortal, doesn't have will of his own. Harry had him, asked him to do it. Or I thought he came up with it, but whatever. But he's not immortal. So his will, throwing the bottle or whatever, couldn't break it. I think later on in the, I don't know. But even if that's true, then why would they need to clear off the circle last chapter of all the boxes and stuff that were on it? Why couldn't they just get in it and activate it and then just kind of push the boxes out? I don't know. It just seems weird. We get running water all in this chapter. Dresden's main goal in this chapter is to get to the end of the street, to Reading Street, where there's running water from the rain coming down. It's flooded. He says that running water, there's just too, like, there's no explanation here about what running water would do to a magical creature like the toad demon. All he really says is there's a brief mention of grounding and that he tells Susan that it'll kill it, which I think is more of just a glossing over, like, oh yeah, it'll kill it, totally. When, you know, it's not exactly what it does. It's sort of like, you know, AIDS doesn't kill you, pneumonia kills you, but your immunity is so down. It's sort of like that. It's not the prime cause for the destruction, but it is what it does. Maybe I'm not explaining that right. But anyway. Now, I tried to look up running water in just general magical circles, how it's been used throughout the centuries, whatever. Apparently it's huge. Number one, the first hit you get when you look up running water is that it's a source of erosion. So, you know, plant your shrubs near your places where you think their erosion will be, so they won't the groundwater won't be taken away. But there are actual folktales inconsistent regarding how and what creatures running water works against, but it's generally best against vampires, ghosts, witches, and wizards. For almost anything else, it's still worth a try. A lot of stories do it. Careful on bridges, though. There might be trolls underneath it or whatever else. Symbolically, it makes sense for water to work as a barrier against certain monsters. Water is a source of life, and so it works naturally against the undead. On a practical level, it can also deter predatory creatures that hunt by smell, as water can misdirect damp scents and trails. So you sort of see the idea that people know that life comes from water, that water is necessary for life. And also, like, creatures can't track you. Like, if you're being hunted by a bear and it's hunting you by smell, it can't track you if you run through water. Or a dog would be the actually best creature to talk about there. So you put that together, and then, of course, an undead creature couldn't follow you because water is the source of life, and it couldn't track you over that because a dog can't do it. Why could an undead being? Some variations as to what form of water would work. Here we can definitely see it's actually the running flooded water down on the street, not the rain that's falling. So there's two different types of things. Rain or the ocean, you know, may not qualify. Rivers almost always work in the stories. Holy water, of course, packs extra, but not as well known to be a flooding sort of thing, a flowing. And there's a whole page on TV tropes. I don't know if you've ever gone to that website, but if you like looking at how various, I don't know, just go on there. There's just tons of examples on running water. My favorite, actually, of all books, movies, TV shows, any type of media you can think about, they've run most of the examples of running water and how it's been used not only in folklore but in popular media. My favorite is actually Sleepy Hollow. If you remember Ichabod Crane going home from the party where he's learned about the Headless Horseman, gets chased by the Headless Horseman, and has also learned that if you can get over the bridge, over the running water, that the horseman can't chase you. And my favorite image is still the cartoon image of the Headless Horseman not be able to cross the bridge, cross the river, but his head can, and he takes off that flaming pumpkin and tosses it at Ichabod, and the screen goes black. That's my favorite image of the running water saving you. But I did not know there was also a type of paint that is supposed to deter ghosts. Usually from the South, American Southern slave descendants, they paint their port ceilings, doors, and windows with a blue paint called Haint Blue, H-A-I-N-T, which is another word for ghost. And it's available today, still. So, there you go. We've learned a lot about water. The Toad Demon himself, we learn a little bit, but not much. He's not very smart. When they do their escape thing, he just stays in the house and starts tearing stuff apart. And that's all he does. He doesn't try to find them in any other way, which also sort of tells about the spell. It doesn't. To him, they just disappeared. But to them, they were like the wind or whatever. He is strong enough to throw a car. Hey, a car gets in his way, and he picks it up and just tosses it. And apparently, he runs on his hind legs, but sort of at a waddle. So, I don't know. It just, that's a weird image. But he has powerful hind legs that he can jump with. So why didn't he just jump the distance? Because the story wouldn't happen, then they'd all die. There's a couple of cultural things, but not much in this chapter. Like I said, it's mostly just a Dresden facing down the demon and the evil guy and Morgan. It's very odd. But we do hear the payphone again. Dresden says, sorry, deposit 25 cents if you want to hear again. And then he closes down the shadow man, shadow person's talking thing. And we talked about payphones in chapter 10 if you want to get a very succinct history of payphones. We also get an X-Men reference that I thought's kind of interesting. I don't know. If you'll remember in X-Men by Bryan Singer in 2000, there is a moment where a creature named Toad is being talked to, I guess, by the resident weather person, Storm. And she says, you know what happens when a toad gets struck by lightning? The same thing that happens to everything else. It's a horrible line, supposedly written by Joss Whedon on a punch-up, but who knows. It could have been delivered better, but it causes a man named Toad to be electrocuted and thrown away off the, I think it's the Statue of Liberty, I believe. I can't remember exactly. So I was just kind of curious that that happened at almost exactly the same time. The movie came out in July of 2000, and this book was released in April of 2000. So there's no way they could have read that or inferred that this situation happened in this book, but I just think it's very congruous that those two things happened. Because for the first, I thought this was like just some kind of clever commentary on the X-Men movie, because I remember that movie coming out earlier. I don't know why. But then I thought, nah. Well, then I was like, well, maybe one of the X-Men writers was familiar with Jim Butcher. And like, nope, they came out pretty much exactly the same time, would have been written about the same time, as far as production schedules and book release goes and everything like that. So kind of fascinating. And that's all I have for chapter 14 of Stormfront for this episode of Wizard in the Book. We do have a Twitter account, Wizard in the Book, at Wizard in the Book, I think. You can also follow us on, well, everything is on Banned Library, BANNED, library.com. That's where these episodes are hosted. You can also go on, if you'd like to support us, go to patreon.com/banned library. You get these episodes a little bit early. I post these early on Patreon, put up a little something extra every week. It may be Dresden Files related, may not be, I don't know. But there you are. I still don't have a sign off, so read the book, people. Thanks for listening, and goodbye.